You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Good to be with you on a Friday as we head into the 9 o'clock hour. The Watt parents have got to be torn. You've got TJ and Derek on one side this weekend with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And JJ Watt, future Hall of Famer, is a Houston Texan. The two teams face off on Sunday, noon kick here on Sports Radio 610. Here are the Watt parents earlier this week talking about how disappointed they are that they won't be able to be in attendance at the game.
We've been at all the games when the kids played one another, and you know, many of their games, we always try to go to as many games as possible throughout the season. So not being there is really hard. I mean, this is a dream come true to have all three of them on the field and playing together at the same time. Photo opportunities, I mean, just something we've always wanted and dreamed of, and to not be able to be there is really difficult. I just keep holding out hope that somehow we're going to squeak into that stadium somehow. it's probably one of the hardest things of our time, our family.
I mean, we thought about, can we buy some staff jackets online or something, or medical jackets, and maybe sneak in through a back entrance, but we don't want to take those chances.
Okay, so real talk, Seth, and the answer can't be neither. Who are the Watt parents rooting for on Sunday? Are they rooting for the Texans, or are they rooting for the Steelers?
Oh, that's a really good question. I didn't realize you were going to ask me that way. So in your heart of hearts, let's say you're a parent and you would never admit it publicly, but you do have a favorite.
Yeah. Do you want me to make the argument for
each
one?
I would say it's going to be T.J. Watt, because T.J.'s got the most future earning potential.
Okay.
So
I like that.
For the good of my children and that entire generation, look,
yeah.
J.J.'s made his money. There's only so much. Like, J.J. could be Defensive Player of the Year this year, and he's not going to make as much future earnings as T.J. Watt can. So they should be rooting for T.J. Watt. And then afterwards, hug J.J. and say, I'm sorry, son. But, you know, don't take it personal. It was just about the money.
Okay, one thing we've learned in this segment, Seth Payne, mercenary. That's what he is. You're boiling straight down to future earnings. I like that.
Hey, that works out well for J.J. too. Less chance that J.J. is going to have to take care of his destitute brothers at some point.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, no, that's tough keeping the lights on in the T.J. Watt and Derek Watt households. Here are the arguments. I like that. And I'm a little surprised TJ hasn't gotten a contract extension. He's in the same draft class, first round pick of the same draft class as Mahomes and McCaffrey and Deshaun Watson. These are all guys who are at the same level. You know, they were all picked higher than TJ, but TJ's accomplished certainly, maybe nobody's accomplished at the level of Mahomes, but he's certainly accomplished to the level of McCaffrey and Watson. He's a first team all pro. At any rate, here, Seth, to me, these are the arguments for each side. The argument for the Watt parents rooting for the Texans goes like this. J.J. has had a much rougher go the last few years. J.J.'s missed half the games because of these injuries. You feel bad for J.J. because time is running out on his career. They're 0-2, the Texans are, and they need this win in the micro window of 2020. They need this win more than the Steelers do. And also, my guess is J.J. has probably gotten the parents way nicer Christmas gifts through the years than T.J. and Derek have, because he's made nine figures.
Doesn't mean as much, though. Sure, J.J. might have gotten her a car or something, but that was back when T.J. and Derek were still drawing nice little like dinosaur cards and stuff and handing them to her.
Really? Those mean the same thing as a new car, the dinosaur drawings? Okay.
Counterpoint.
Yeah.
Yes, the Watt family loves Houston. Yes, J.J.'s foundation has incredible inroads in Houston, and there will always be this incredible sentimental pull back towards Houston. So they want J.J. to succeed in Houston, which sometimes you got to take a step back if you want to take two steps forward. If the Watt family are indeed Texans fans, then there's a good chance that, like many Texans fans, they want a different head coach. And success this year does not necessarily provide a Super Bowl for JJ, but it also lets Bill O'Brien retain his job. So there might be a part of JJ's family that's saying, like, all right, look, it's for the best, JJ. Just hold on there. You want to spend your whole career in Houston, but you want to have a shot. This is the way.
That's a really interesting point. I'll take it a step further in terms of rooting for the Steelers. Is that, hey, even if the Texans do win, does anybody really feel like if they win this game that they've got a chance at the number one seed in the AFC? You know what I mean? They're 1-2. I think that people are still in much more of a prove it mode, even if they win this game with the Texans. Whereas if the Steelers win, holy crap, now they're 3-0. They're feeling it a little bit. And the number one seed is important in the AFC and NFC this year because that's the only seed that gets a bye in the first round. You know, mm-hmm. that is crucial to making a long playoff run. So I think if you look at the bigger picture and go, who should we root for based on what we think their ceiling is or their capability? I think the Watt parents probably look at this at the Texans and go, yeah, the ceiling's probably still 10-6 with this team, even if they win this game right now. There's just too many issues on this team. Whereas if the Steelers win, and especially if they win convincingly, you know, now all of a sudden you go, hey, man, anything's possible with this squad.
Yeah. I guess I wonder, too, the Watt family probably feels there's a difference. There are a few teams in the league, whether it's the Steelers, the Raiders, Green Bay. I think those are the three teams that probably are most pervasive in terms of having fans in every city.
Oh, yeah.
Like you go to a sports bar on a Sunday in any city in America, and there's a very good chance there's going to be some vocal Raiders fans, some vocal Steelers fans, or some less vocal Green Bay fans. I think that they, even if they're not from Wisconsin, they try to kind of pretend like they're quiet Midwesterners. So, I wonder if the Watt family enjoys going to the away games for TJ more than they like going to away games for JJ.
I'm going to say they're rooting for the Texans. I think there's a sentimentality with the Watt parents where they realize, look, TJ and Derek are going to, we've got enough money. We don't need to worry about TJ making, you know, $130 million versus $115 million. JJ is, he's closer to the end than he is to the beginning. JJ's been very good to us. He's a good boy. We want JJ to win.
What about, has Venus and Serena Williams' dad there, have people ever tried to figure out, like, all right, does he actually have a favorite daughter?
I don't know. That's a good question.
That'd be a tough one, man. I don't know how I would handle that as a parent, watching your kids battle each other like that. And you know they're both super competitive kids, too.
Yeah.
Watching the Harbaugh brothers in the Super Bowl, if you're their parents there, I think they would be pretty easy to root for, John.
Versus
parents.
Jim, hell yeah.
Like, which one of those guys gave you more trouble growing up?
Yeah.
You know it was Jim.
I can't even believe they emerged from the same womb. They're so different, you know?
You know at some point growing up, Mr. Harbaugh had to call in a few favors to get Jim out of trouble.
Totally.
Where John was probably in bed by 9, up early to feed the dog and get off to school and help out the old lady teachers beforehand, yeah.
Here's J.J. Watt on all three brothers being on the field at the same time on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. And, I mean, it truly is incredible. I mean, just to have all of us, you know, playing at Wisconsin was really cool. Just to have all of us playing in the NFL was really cool. To play against another brother was cool. Now to have all of us on the field at the same time in the same game, it really doesn't get any better than that. It's incredible. It's special. It's a testament to our parents and everything that they did and all the people in our lives, our coaches, our trainers, everybody who helped us get here. And it's going to be very, very cool. And I hope that we're going to find out if my brothers have any pull up there in Pittsburgh, because I think my parents should be there for this. It's a very special thing. Like you said, I think it's the second time in 93 years. I think that if we can find a way to get my parents there, it would be pretty cool.
Yeah, cool until you put the picture up on Instagram, and then everybody's like, oh, look who they let in the stadium when there's no fans allowed in the stadium. Look at that, huh?
Special favors.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know if people would pull that. I mean, some would, but you can't. You know, like, you get it. It's a very rare occurrence, I suppose.
Oh, to be clear, some definitely would, and I definitely don't think it would be how the majority of people feel. But it would be a vocal enough sect to where that would be the sect that got attention, you know?
Hey, you know what I wanted to watch for last week, Sean? Was, you know, JJ had talked about how it was going to be weird not being able to play catch with the kids like he usually does before the game. I was wondering if JJ would still, like, play catch with one of the stadium staff or something.
Oh, yeah.
But I suppose even then they'd be sharing the ball back and forth, and that's up above that eight-row moat that protects everybody.
Yeah, I don't need Gus in section 115 giving JJ the COVID because he forgot to hand sanitize.
Yeah.
You know?
That's how the NFL came crashing
down. That's what's going to bring it down, man. That's that small thermal port on the Death Star right there. Like, God, we didn't account for this. God, how did they destroy this basic mechanical planet with one proton torpedo? That's how it happens. Gus, the security guard in Section 115, having COVID on his mitts. Yeah,
that was one of the weirdest experiences I've ever had in sports. I guess we didn't talk too much about it, but just we sat up there in that suite on the upper row, and had an entire stadium to ourselves.
Yeah,
I mean there were several hundred people in that entire stadium. Yeah. I would guess between the teams and it felt like there were more security staff members than actual media members in there.
Yeah, Seth, just from like a Pavlovian standpoint, I almost just took my pants off and sat in my underwear in there. There were so few people.
We're going to have fans there next time.
Let's run around the 800 level. Yeah, that's true. They're going to be fans. I don't know if they're going to be allowed up where we were. We were up in the rafters.
That very highest. We're in the genius of modern marketing that they've turned those into premium seats.
Incredible.
Very highest seats in the stadium. But it's nice. You got a suite there and everything. Vandermeer got us some good food. It was really, really cool. The coolest thing about it, though, this is going to sound cheesy. It was nice actually being able, like, it was strange to be able to hear the quarterbacks and everything from way up there.
Yeah.
Because it was that quiet. But during the introductions, they still did the steam, and that was pretty badass because it was loud.
Yeah.
You heard that steam,
yep.
And it sounded like you're in the middle of a factory or something, you know, making widgets. It was, and JJ came out last, and he was in this in all this steam. It was really cool.
The one thing that I heard from us being in the empty stadium on Sunday that, as a player, you probably didn't think twice about it, but as a fan, I was like, oh, that's right, they did. Is when it was a pass, and you hear the whole sideline scream out, pass.
Yeah.
Like, that's a pretty basic football thing that I'm going, holy crap, like, I forgot that they do that on the sideline at an NFL. I forgot that the team on defense screams out pass to help out their defenders. All right, bottom of the hour, Lisa Ann will jump in with us, and she will give some fantasy football advice. Boy, this is a week that you could really use some fantasy advice because of all the injuries last week. Just a slew of injuries. Who are the replacements for the injured players? How do the injuries affect, you know, ripple effects, some of these matchups? So she'll jump in for her weekly visit for week 3 of the NFL season at the bottom of the hour. Bill O'Brien and Dusty Baker have something very important in common. At least they did until last night for the Astros. It surrounds the most important question about their two teams as they head into October. We'll have it for you next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Lisa Ann joins us for fantasy football advice at the bottom of the hour. Here was a very downtrodden Bill O'Brien earlier this week when asked about the Texans' offense.
Yeah, we got a long way to go, Aaron. We got to get going here this week. We got to score more points than the other team. We got to get going. So it's not where we want it to be, quite obviously.
Right,
but
so that,
we're working hard to get it better.
Bill O'Brien just voice guide me. So that's Bill O'Brien earlier this week, sounding pretty beat up over this. This is Dusty Baker before last night. This is Dusty Baker the same day. This is Dusty Baker on the Astros offense.
Between Cintron and Snicker, I mean, they're pulling their hair out and trying to figure out, you know, what's wrong, and I'm trying to help them. And, you know, the guys are, you know, putting in the work and putting in the time. It's just, you know, today, you know, we hit a couple balls hard, you know, for outs, and then, you know, the strikeouts, you know, at the wrong time is killing us right now.
So, Seth, I feel like, so we hit the ball hard at the you know, right at people for outs. That's the baseball equivalent of, well, we did move the football some,
yeah,
in the second half of games. So this is probably a better question before last night. This would have been a better question on yesterday's show. But I don't want to just overreact to one Astros game where the bats finally woke up and act like it's some sort of epiphany where now all of a sudden the 2017 Astros are walking through that door. You have to pick one side or the other, the Texans or the Astros. Which offense do you trust to come back for the month of October, the Texans or the Astros?
Well, say you said come back. Where exactly was the Texans' offense before?
Well, come, I guess,
suppose.
Yeah, no, I
guess. Or actually show up.
Yeah, revive, show up, yeah, show up, become, yeah, become proficient, yes.
I would say,
fair point, though.
Boy, that's a really good question. You son of a bitch. That is a really good question. I have to just, based on history, and because of the fact that O'Brien has yet to actually have a good offense in the NFL. I have to say the Astros. The Astros have a whole bunch of guys who looked really good last night that maybe was just one of the weirdest extended slumps by a large group of people as they tried to deal with both a pandemic and the entire baseball world hating them. That, yeah, I think the Astros have more of a chance to show what we think they're capable of.
Yes.
I still don't know what the Texans are capable of offense. And it's not like I was – there was not one point this offseason where I was actually excited about the Texans' offense. I was curious about what this experiment might yield. But – and I was intrigued by the amount of speed on the field. But compared to how I felt about the Astros' offense, no, not even close. So, yeah, I'm much more. I don't expect either of them to return, but I give the Astros a better chance.
You've seen it with your eyes before, and again, this is probably a question that would have been better before the Astros exploded for 12 runs yesterday. Because I think if I were to put up a poll and ask the people that question yesterday, I think it would have been pretty split, quite honestly, between the Texans and the Astros, because the Astros had looked so abysmal and futile for the previous 2 weeks. They'd scored 42 runs in 2 weeks. We know if you put up a poll on social media how much recency matters. They put up 12 runs last night. All the big names were hitting, three hits each for Springer and Bregman and Altuve. Even Reddick chimed in with three hits, which led to Dusty Baker sounding like this after the game last night.
It was better late than never. And we got some guys, had some, big offensive nights. I think the one that set the stage really was Altuve's, battle at bat. I don't know what it was, a 10-pitch at bat. And, got a hit in that first inning. That was real big.
I'll give Dusty credit, Seth. Dusty's tone and his levels, his voice, is the same whether they suck or whether they scored 12 runs last night. You know what I mean? Dusty doesn't wear his mood on his sleeve. O'Brien wears his mood on his sleeve.
There's something about the Texans' offense that's bothering a whole lot of people right now. And it's something we need to keep an eye on. Thank God the NFL provides these advanced stats that they do now, these next-gen stats. Our guy, our digital director and our Texans insider, Brandon Scott, asked Tim Kelly a question yesterday about separation with the receivers. And the answer was okay. But I think this is the important thing to remember. Like, you wanted to get all that extra speed, right? Because now you've got guys who are fast, not like slow DeAndre Hopkins. And these guys are going to get separation. Last year in 2019, Brandon Cooks, Randall Cobb, Will Fuller, they all had three or more yards of separation when they were targeted, whereas DeAndre Hopkins only had 2.7 yards. So you might think, oh, okay, maybe there's some truth to that. So far, through just two games versus good defenses, but still, DeAndre Hopkins has almost over a full yard more than any of those guys of separation. DeAndre Hopkins in his new offense is getting 4 yards of separation. Randall Cobb, Will Fuller, and Brandon Cooks are all lower than where they were last year in how much separation they got.
Okay.
So this experiment of, oh, yeah, you just got to have speed all over the place, and defenses won't know what to do with themselves, and DeAndre Hopkins, he's slow. Nobody cares about him. Well, even Will Fuller in the same offense doesn't have as much separation as he had last year because he's not getting heat taken off of him by DeAndre Hopkins. So that more than anything is what is making me pessimistic about this Texans offense doing anything. So far, the promises that were made that were implicit in getting rid of DeAndre Hopkins and bringing these other guys in have fallen flat on their face. And there isn't extra separation. Randall Cobb is a non-factor. Will Fuller is injured again. That's not DeAndre Hopkins' fault or Bill O'Brien. Well, that's kind of Bill O'Brien's fault. But the Astros are just they're just slumping. Or they were slumping.
Yeah. I don't know, Seth, Tim Kelly, I do want to play that answer about separation.
Oh, okay.
Tim Kelly says to me and us and everybody that separation looks fine to him.
Yes, yeah. I think the route running that we saw on Sunday here against a really good secondary, I mean, you look at that secondary with Jimmy Smith and Marcus Peters and, obviously they moved Humphrey inside. Those are some good players, and our guys are doing a good job of creating separation and getting open. Now we've got to do a better job of being more consistent with that, and we've got to do a better job of finding ways to get them open. But in terms of creating separation, I feel like our guys have been doing a really good job with that.
Now credit Rivers McCown for compiling those stats earlier.
Yeah.
This is the thing, Sean. I don't want to crush Tim Kelly or anything because he's opening up in press conferences this year, and I want to keep encouraging that.
Yeah.
I don't even get any blowback and all of a sudden turtle up and be a different guy. I think that Jordan Akins got good separation, right? I think David Johnson got great separation. So maybe you could say, hey, those guys are benefiting from teams having to focus on their wide receivers. I'm willing to see that side of it. And I guess we have to remember that it's the whole crew. It's all five eligible receivers on any given pass play that you're just trying to get more of those guys open. Okay. But you also need to score points and score them quickly at times. And so far, the guys who are most capable of doing that, your wide receivers, haven't done a whole lot.
The intriguing part of what you said there to me, the Texans part is very intriguing. I honestly, when the Hopkins side of it is very intriguing to me too, Seth. How much of that is Kingsbury? How much of that is Kingsbury scheming Hopkins open? I remember the play in week one where it looked like he scored a touchdown to win the game. And they ended up reviewing it, and he was down at the 1 yard line. They wind up winning the game anyways and scoring a touchdown. But I remember on that play, I'm like, holy crap, DeAndre Hopkins is wide open in a part of the field where he's not hiding at all. He's standing right in the middle of the field, and he's wide open with time to catch the ball, literally turn around and head north-south towards the pylon.
I'll give Kingsbury credit for that. I want to hold off on making too many judgments about just how well Kingsbury's using Hopkins compared to O'Brien, because it's only been two games. And if you look at week one, for one, DeAndre matched up really well to what the 49ers want to do on defense. They play a lot of cover four. They didn't necessarily do some of the things that teams do to try to limit DeAndre Hopkins. And So that worked out really well, and Kingsbury did a great job with it. Last week, Hopkins was productive, but he also averaged, you know, he's averaging 10 yards per catch so far on the season. He was very much a possession receiver last week. So if week two was the only thing we had seen, I might say, oh, gosh, man, DeAndre really is. Boy, he's not breaking the deep ones anymore. After week one, yeah, I was all for saying, wow, Kingsbury just knows how to get him open. We'll see. So far, Hopkins is having a very good year for what they want him to do, and he's scored. That's important. So I think more so I'm concerned with where is this electric, fast offense that I wanted to see with the Texans that I was promised with all of these fast guys out there.
Yeah, Andy in Cyprus is taking a glass half full approach, I think, on the text page. As a wide receiver in a new system, when you don't fully know your role, you don't play at full speed. As these guys get more comfortable with their role, they will begin to play at their full potential. I think, Seth, when I think of that, my first thought is the frustration over how little we actually saw some of these pieces practicing with Deshaun Watson in the preseason. Brandon Cooks played, to my recollection, and I was at 10 of the 14 practices. To my recollection, Brandon Cooks played in one of the 11-on-11 practices. That's it. Will Fuller barely played at all. And you may say, well, Deshaun should have chemistry with Will Fuller. He's been here 4 years. This is his fourth year with Will Fuller. I mean, yeah, kind of, but Will, it's not like Will Fuller plays 16 games every year. You know what I mean? Like, with the chemistry with Will Fuller, I could see where it could be sort of a hit or miss thing just because you don't know if he's going to be there every Sunday. It's not like it's been consistent play with Will Fuller through that 4 years, but Randall Cobb didn't take a full workload in training camp either. So that's, I don't disagree with what Andy and Cyprus is saying. I just feel like some of this was preventable, but obviously Bill O'Brien and by extension Jack Easterby feel it was more important to protect these guys from any sort of medical issues than it was to work on the chemistry with their with their quarterback.
One of our listeners, I think it was Tom Middlescreen on Twitter, that made the point that, hey, you know what? Chances of winning these first two games versus those defense was pretty slight anyways. So if you're going to start off rusty and get your ass kicked, you might as well play against these guys and just chalk it off as a loss anyway. It feels like a defeatist way to think of looking at things. But given what the texter just said, yeah, I'll cut them somewhat of a break for having to integrate all these new pieces in during a COVID reduced training camp. But obviously, they got to start showing something now. Fine, your 2 week grace period is way, way over.
You got to be 4-3 at the bye week, or else the heat gets turned up on the seat. Period. End of story. That's it. All right, download the radio.com app and use the radio.com rewind feature. A lot of people texting in saying, hey, I love using the rewind feature. They say, I love using the rewind feature. I hate, though, that I'm texting in an hour after you guys were talking about something. That's just part of the deal that comes with it. I would say it's better to have the feature than to not have it and rewind. We encourage you to download our podcast as well. Seth and I are doing some really good podcast numbers. We appreciate everybody who's subscribed to it and downloaded. You can subscribe to it wherever you get podcasts. Lisa Ann, fantasy football expert. If you play fantasy football, you will, and even if you're just a football fan, she's really good with just observations that are non-fantasy as well. But there were so many injuries last week. Who do you need to go pick up? What are the effects on your fantasy team? What are the effects on these NFL teams with these injuries? Just a spate of injuries last week. That's Lisa Ann next.
From the Twin Peaks studio, it's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Indeed, it is Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610, and it's week three of the NFL season. Thursday night game already in the books. The Dolphins beating the Jags last night, 31-13. And the rest of the slate coming up this weekend. And if it's, you know, week three in the NFL heating up, that means fantasy football is heating up. And I don't know, I can ever remember a weekend that we're coming off of where fantasy advice is probably needed more than this, just the slew of injuries that we saw last week. And so good news, everybody. At this time, each and every week, we are joined by our fantasy football expert and good friend Lisa Ann joining us on the show. If you want to text in your questions, 713-572-4610, we'll rapid fire some stardoms and sit-ums and sleepers and things like that a little later on this segment. Lisa, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. I think it's exciting to see that Ryan Fitzpatrick really showed Gardner Minshew about being an elder last night. If you saw the banter between the two of them this week over mustache versus beard, and then Minshew said, I was told to respect my elders, especially when they're much elder. That's what happens when you talk smack in sports, and Fitz magic was certainly real last night.
Yeah, where do you come out on that beard or mustache, Lisa?
You know, I'm neutral. I just love to see the personalities. This is just a sign that, you know, players are just like us. They were quarantined too. They are happy to be back to work. The entertainment value in sports right now is so incredible because we're all so focused and thankful to have it. I just love the banter. I love seeing players just show their personality. Minshew's got a wild look. You know, Fitz has his thing going on. It's just all good.
Where are you on Gardner Minshew as a quarterback? Because it seems like whenever he has a good game, people think he's the future. And then when he has a bad game, people are idiots forever thinking he was the future. Does he have a future?
He does have a future. I think the inconsistencies with the receivers, DJ Chark not being there last night was a huge impact because now defenses can really prepare and really take out those receivers. Not much there in the running back situation since they let go of Fournette. There's definitely needs to be work on the line for Gardner Minshew to succeed. But I think he kind of falls into that category where it's like, is he a Baker Mayfield or does he have the potential to be more like in the future a Carson Wentz, right? He's kind of in that gray area, but I don't think he's got all the pieces around him to build the best success.
Lisa Ann joining us for her weekly visit, Fantasy Football. Lisa, just before we get into specific players, how does someone like you who's in, what are you in, a couple dozen leagues?
15 leagues.
15 yeah. leagues. Okay, so you're in over a dozen leagues. How does someone who's in over a dozen leagues even process what's going on with all those injuries last Sunday? Like you must have been getting push notifications galore on your phone on Sunday with all these injuries, thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do? How does it affect this team? What's
you mean
that
the
like?
Carnage?
Yes, yeah, the carnage
that was the first 15 minutes of the games last season, yes. last weekend. So in the leagues that I commissioned, I prepared for COVID. So I added 6 additional bench spots and 3 additional IR spots. So it gave us a deeper draft. So the panic isn't really there to fight on the waiver wire. But in the couple of leagues that I'm in, like I'm in a 14-team league and I couldn't get the commissioner to change any settings. And there's teams that are just done. I mean, they're so affected by injuries in a 14-team league. There's not much left on the waiver wire. So it's just going to be low scoring matchups at best. You can't quit. But planning ahead makes people less frustrated. And in the leagues that I commissioned that I did plan ahead, everyone's already coming to me saying, oh my gosh, this is so much better because like I was able to handcuff Emmanuel Sanders to Michael Thomas. Yeah. Like in areas where I really like the offense, I made sure I had volume. Now, Emmanuel Sanders didn't do anything for me this week, so that doesn't really count. But saying that you have those extra spots allows you to pivot a lot easier. I saw this coming, not just with COVID, with the fact that they've changed the travel schedule for the players. They're not getting in that full extra day to adjust to the full walkthrough, all of those things. And look, we had no preseason. Though the Stars don't play in preseason, that dress rehearsal and that time they put in to get in the rhythm of traveling again and being out and about with their routine, that didn't happen. And now we're seeing the effects of that not happening. The lack of conditioning, the no rookie minicamp for these kids. I mean, it was almost hard to watch. And then the Cowboys' first three quarters, I didn't know what was worse, all the injuries on my fantasy teams or the first three quarters of that Cowboys game, because I had to turn my phone off because, you know, all my friends are just trash-talking me nonstop. Like, did your Cowgirls know there was a game today? Like, you know, it was awful. They were just brutal.
Lisa, it hasn't been a great year, obviously, for the Texans' offense so far. One, at least, bright spot or encouraging point has been the emergence of Jordan Akins. He'd be on pace for 72 receptions, whatever that's worth at this point in the season after just two games. But are people starting to notice, are they intrigued by Jordan Akins?
Yeah, for sure, because you got the trust of Deshaun Watson. You've got a lot of fantasy owners and football fans that know what Deshaun Watson can do. So get him a viable connection, and they're going to go for it, right? Will Fuller is spotty at best, and you know the Texans. You guys have faced an awful schedule the first 4 weeks of the season, and so what fantasy owners will start to do is panic. And this is the time where you should be smart and try and get Deshaun Watson in as many leagues as you can, because as the season starts to balance out, the schedule will get better. And he's not a quitter. Neither are the other players on the team. Like Randall Cobb's really throwing it out there as well. I love what he's doing. I see David Johnson staying consistent through the season, but these matchups have been brutal.
Lisa Ann joining us on Sports Radio 610. All right, so Lisa, let's circle back. You mentioned Michael Thomas, but Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey. Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, and Michael Thomas might have been the first three picks in a lot of people's leagues, or might have been the highest guys off the board in an auction. The two running backs, Barkley and McCaffrey, what do Barkley and McCaffrey owners do at this point?
They cry until about Tuesday, yep. And then Tuesday night they sit on the waiver wire and they sulk because there's not much there. I mean, you know, I put in some bids. I got Devonta Freeman, though I'm not really looking to play him this week. Wanted to let him get, you know, acclimated, playbook, all of this. You just got to start to pivot, and you're going to have to be invested in backfields that are shared. You're not going to get that one lone workhorse like an Ezekiel Elliott. You're going to have to piece it together, and then what's going to happen is you're going to face other teams in your league in the same spot. So they'll just be lower scores. Week one, a lot of fantasy teams were putting up 200 points. Week two, it went down to about 115. So luckily, we're all feeling the same pain, and because those were the first four or five draft picks, Michael Thomas, the first receiver, Christian McCaffrey, the first running back, Saquon, the second running back. So that's divided equally upon three different teams right there. So it kind of balanced out how you're going to be facing. You're not at a total loss, but look, there's beautiful things happening. Chris Godwin is off the concussion protocol, so we can put him back into our lineups. If you have Calvin Ridley, you are just ecstatic. If you have Julio Jones, not so much. So just got to look for that balance, and you got to constantly be looking at who's been dropped, because there's a potential that good players are being dropped right now to pick up players and tuck players away on their IR, hoping they'll come back. And checking those waiver reports is really important.
Yeah.
Do you think Julio Jones at some point is going to bounce back, or is this endemic of age and falconry and whatever else?
It's such a bummer, right? I mean, you know, we hear yesterday that Julio Jones' hamstring is worse than he let on to be. But then again, we also didn't know that Tyrod Taylor was dealing with bruised ribs before he got an injection that went wrong. So, you know, Julio, can he turn back time? I think it's age catching up with him. I think it's workload catching up with him. And then it's got to be frustrating to not be on a winning team, right? There's something about winning that propels you through maybe an injury that can get you that one good catch and maybe 70 yards, and you've got some points for your fantasy owners. But it's a frustrating situation. I didn't draft Julio Jones this season because I do look at the age of a receiver, not to be an ageist, but you have to be realistic. And, you know, Calvin Ridley is the hot new thing in Atlanta, and he's putting up 2 touchdowns a week.
Yeah. No doubt about it. Lisa Ann joining us on Sports Radio 610. So, Lisa, the one team that got hit the hardest by the injuries was the San Francisco 49ers, who lost their quarterback. They lost their starting running back. They lost their second running back. Their tight end is banged up. And then on the defensive side, they lose one of the best young defensive players in football, Nick Bosa. They lose Solomon Thomas. Richard Sherman's banged up. How do all these things that are going on with San Francisco play out from a fantasy standpoint, either in how you look at players that are backfilling these guys that you might want to pick up, or how, if you have the San Francisco defense, which was supposed to be one of the defenses, best defenses in the league, or you have players that are on teams going against San Francisco, like the Giants this week, how do all these injuries for San Francisco play out from a fantasy standpoint?
As a fantasy owner, you kind of got to pull back. You got to pull back and wait and see how this team puts it back together. There would be no reason to hold on to that defense. There's a fear factor with any of the weapons, right? Will Jimmy Garoppolo play? There is a question that he might actually play, but no George Kittle. Mostert out. I mean, you know, Carlos Hyde still there. Okay, there's an option, but I just think the team is falling apart. Listen, they get to look back, guys, and remember that in 2020, they were in the Super Bowl. So if that hopefully is what they say to themselves at night when they look at photos in their phone, remember, we did go to the Super Bowl. It is a bummer, but who's going to be the team this week?
Yeah.
I mean, there's got to be, you know, you have to look at it that way, right? You're looking at teams that are healthy like the Dallas Cowboys, okay? Who's going to be the team this week? It hit the 49ers all at one time. Yeah. And they're really complaining about that turf. And that turf is a product of not arriving in a day early and being able to try all of the different cleats on the turf, which is what players would normally do when they go in 48 hours as opposed to 24 hours early.
Yeah, this just in, there's a bunch of teams that play on that turf all the time. They're complaining about the turf like the turf has a personal vendetta against the San Francisco 49ers.
You know what? It could have been something with how it was treated or cleaned. Could have been something with the temperature. It could have been something that really did change the dynamic. I mean, I'm sure you guys saw the video about a guy just strolling into Miller Park and cutting the grass and like playing around in a stadium that's not even open.
Yeah.
Like you see this stuff and you're like, did somebody go in there and sabotage the field and the NFL didn't inspect it the day before the game? Like it's not normal that many players would be having the same complaint. And now San Fran goes back to that same field this week.
It's a good point. Lisa, let's do some stardoms and sit-ems and questions about sleepers. We'll rapid fire a few of these. Text in 713-572-4610. Hey guys, can you tell Lisa or ask Lisa if I should flex Dallas Goedert or C.D. Lamb?
Oh, that's such a tough one. Those are two good options and good for you. But I'm going to say Dallas Goedert against the Cincinnati Bengals. They've been giving up a lot to tight ends. I love C.D. Lamb, but that's going to be a tougher matchup against Seattle. So I'm going Dallas Goedert.
I have C.D. Lamb on both of my fantasy teams, Lisa. Is there a point this year you think where he becomes a higher option? I mean, he's already put up good numbers for a rookie. Is there a point this season where you think he becomes a higher receiver on what's a pretty strong pecking order right now in Dallas?
I do. And, you know, I thought he would get an uptick in production right away because they lost their tight end week one. But in my situation, it's going to be if Michael Gallup can't prove some consistency to Dak, I think Dak's going to start to favor CeeDee Lamb over Michael Gallup, which is a bummer because I have way too many shares of Michael Gallup for that to happen.
Stephon Diggs or Odell Beckham Jr.?
Diggs. We never see really Baker Mayfield have two good weeks in a row. Last Thursday night was a great game. Yes, they've gotten the extra work, but Diggs is rolling right now. Diggs is showing us why he no longer wanted to be in Minnesota.
Yeah. Cam Newton or Matt Ryan?
You know, it sounds crazy, but, you know, you look at Matt Ryan and the points that he puts up, even though they never win, that doesn't matter in fantasy, right? So you're looking at matchups. Cam Newton, I like because he gets you the rushing touchdown. So I guess I got to go Cam Newton. I don't love it, but I also don't love how we're feeling right now about Atlanta.
Yeah, Falcons are playing the Bears. Patriots playing the Raiders, by the way.
Yep.
Diggs or McLaurin? McLaurin's put up some nice numbers early in the season.
I'd still go Diggs. Yeah. I like McLaurin, but it's not consistent enough. I'm still going Diggs easily.
Yeah, well, and he's got Josh Allen throwing him the ball. McLaurin's got Dwayne Haskins throwing him the ball. A couple more, Deshaun Watson or Cam Newton?
I still want to play Deshaun Watson. I understand the matchup is not easy. Pittsburgh has an incredible defense, but, you know, they're going to be a little bit more worn down now. It is week three. But I just think Deshaun Watson's a better quarterback.
All right. Last one, Ryan Tannehill. Tennessee has – who does Tennessee have this weekend? The Titans are playing the Vikings. Or Ryan Tannehill or Kirk Cousins, who's on the other side of that matchup. You got to pick a quarterback in that game to play from a fantasy
Tannehill
perspective.
All day long. You know, Tannehill has been solid and smooth for fantasy owners who drafted him really late. You know, I hope Jonnu Smith is, he's a little bit questionable right now, got banged up, but I love the Jonnu Smith action right there. But man, Kirk Cousins is just becoming a choke artist.
Lisa Ann, our fantasy football expert, joins us each and every week in the 9:30 segment. Lisa, good luck this weekend. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next week.
Have a great weekend and enjoy the games. Thanks for having me.
All right, always. Thank you, Lisa Ann, joining us on the program. We go from Lisa Ann to another sexy beast, John Lopez, who's – is his microphone on there, Figgy?
Hello.
There we go. Okay, yeah. All right. How are you?
I am fantastic. I am protecting Landry from the mother of all zits today.
Oh, is that what that is? That Band-Aid on your nose?
I got a Band-Aid on my nose. it was an ugly scene yesterday, man. How does a guy my age get a zit?
I don't know. Usually it's stress. Are you okay?
I'm fine, man. Okay. I'm cool as a cucumber.
Yeah, you always seem that way. Yeah,
I think you're just you're coursing. Your blood is coursing with hormones.
You know what
you're
I think?
You're virile. Yeah,
I think it's
you're as driven today as when you were 17 years old.
Well, that's true. I think the mask might have something to
could
do with
it. That actually could have something to do with it.
Yes. Yeah, that makes more sense. Yeah.
Well, I want yours. I want your reason.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd rather have your reason.
Happening with you guys today?
Well, first of all, Seth, I was watching. I mean, it's almost like a traditional thing. Every time the Texans play the Steelers, I got to watch that 2002 Steelers game. 411 yards of offense for the Steelers, 26 first downs. 47 yards of offense for the Texans, and they destroy the Steelers with three defensive turnovers. I forget who got the fumble return, but Aaron Glenn got two interception pick sixes. And on the second pick six, man, Seth Payne is – he's picking them up and
he is.
Down
he's hauling ass.
As hard as he can, man.
I'm so tired in that game. That was you play defense in a game where your offense only has 47 yards of offense. I remember getting in an argument with somebody after that game because they were like, well, you know, I mean, it wasn't that great of a defense performance. You let up 400 yards. We're on the field for 54
no kidding,
minutes.
No kidding. No kidding. Yeah, so you were going back in the time machine, huh?
Yeah, it was just because Aaron Glenn's a really good friend, and I was really happy for him then. And obviously, Seth, you were huge in that game. Biggest you ever played in 2002?
Those first few years when we were like a true 3-4, I was at my most hoss-like.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you right now, anybody that has lost or is thinking about losing weight in the city of Houston, lose the damn weight.
Yeah.
This weather at 260 compared to 320, night and day.
It's a joy. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what's happening on the show?
It's almost like a Festivus. Landry is going to air a lot of grievances about Tim Kelly. I mean, he is going to air.
Podium critic?
He is going to air some grievances about Tim Kelly. No question about that. And Football Friday, man. I mean, come on. What else do you want?
Don't get any better than this.
A lot of college football stuff
too. Yeah,
We may even recite a couple of paragraphs of my wide right prose from 1991.
Okay, good. I like the dramatic readings of your old columns. I enjoy that very much. All right, we look forward to it as always, John. Good stuff. Thanks for covering up your nose with the Band-Aid. And
I imagine, Sean, we must have missed some news because I see that John McClain 7 minutes ago tweeted out the Texans have no interest in Antonio Brown. So whatever drama surrounds that, I'm guessing that John and Landry will talk about it.
Yeah, O'Brien had a press conference at 9:30 and a question came up about it. So comes from. Yeah.
That's
so,
all. All right.
Hey, quick reminder, you pick 'em contest. You want to get in, compete with a bunch of us hosts here at entercomradio.com/picks. $1,000 a week for the prize for the winner. It's a lot of fun. I'm in there. I'm doing okay. Not too great so far, but you can definitely beat me. Radio.com/picks to sign up to win free money. Seth, real quick, prediction on the game.
I picked the Steelers 28, Texans 21.
Okay, yeah, I've got the Steelers by 9 in this game. Antibodies?
Pessimistic, I suppose.
You've got them by 7.
Yeah.
Antibodies and T cells to you. I'll see you at the. I'll see you on the pregame on Sunday, 9 a.m.
Antibodies, T cells, and two running back backfield sets to you.
There you go. 20 personnel. All right. Antibodies to all of you as well. We'll see you 9 a.m. Sunday morning for the pregame kickoff at noon. Texans Steelers in the loop up next. Have a great day, everybody. Mind if I unbutton your bra right now?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.